This is a special edition of the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 HUR Voices. You are a part of the solution. Together, let's make it better. Back now with Harold Fisher.
Welcome back to Let's Make It Better, a special edition of the Daily Drum right here on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion examining how to improve relations between police and communities of color. I want to talk about how community activists are trying to address this issue. I have in studio with me W. Ellington Felton. He is a community activist and member of the music group Crossroads in the D.C. Metro. Also, a former police officer, Ron Hampton, activist, and we've spoken to him on many occasions. And certainly for those of you paying attention to this program, we heard from him earlier. So I'm going to bring Ron in here in just a bit. Mr. Ellington, there are so many community groups, activist groups trying to make a difference. Are you toiling in obscurity, only preaching to the choir?
I don't feel that we're preaching to the choir. I think that there's a lack of choir right now. I'm old enough and young enough to remember the civil rights movement, first and foremost. That's without somebody showing me a documentary, anything of that nature, because that was still discussed and reminded in my household. You know, we were reminded constantly, the old cliche, boy, before your time, I had to do this and so forth. I think we live in a time of selective morality. I think that we've allowed our belief and faith in God to make us lazy. I think we have a population of what I would call lottery Christians and lottery revelation. Meaning that they're just waiting that somehow some magical solution is going to happen. They're going to be blessed with a miracle. And I don't think people remember, but anytime there was a miracle in the Bible, it was because it was a desperate and dark time. It was never at a time when people were still able to actually function and go out there. And I remember growing up, there was a cliche that said, God helps those who help themselves. Mm-hmm. So for me, as an artist, I can complain. I can talk about the young people. I can say whatever I want to say and blame whoever I want to blame. But as an artist, because I have an outlet, because I have a voice, and because I have the function and the ability to go out there and do something, I choose to be part of the solution. You have some people out here who are, I use that word selective morality. They got some people who won't show up unless there's a paycheck
honorarium. So how would you be a part of that solution?
I am a part of that solution. And myself as an artist and the group that I'm in with Raheem Devon, the Crossroads, we chose to make music that directly reminds not just young people of their responsibility, but also the elders. We live in a time where black adults have dumbed themselves down in order to assimilate and fit in with their children. Where I grew up, where the parents introduced the children to what culture or what doctrinations of a moral compass that they followed. And what we have allowed ourselves as a black community to do, because we're so pressed to assimilate to white culture, we've forgotten what was the recipe and the formulas that worked for us. The brother, the former officer and I were talking about it earlier, where I grew up, where I was taught, you avoid the police. You only call the police unless something really, really happened. And if you do call the police, you either call the police officer that was a member of your church, who was a member of your family, mm-hmm. or you actually knew. And you knew that they would come there and look at it from a humane perspective versus a police officer and a civilian.
That's an interesting point. I want to go to St. Louis and talk to Miranda Jones. She's vice president of Better Family Life in St. Louis. Ms. Jones, thank you so much for joining us. I want you to talk to me about the work and the mission to improve police community relations 2 years after the death of Michael Brown.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
So, it's tireless work here in St. Louis. 2 years later, we are, still dealing with all of the remnants of everything that has happened the last few years. But just even today, our agency, Better Family Life, sponsored a Amnesty Day, which we've actually been doing for 10 years. So this is, this issue with, policing in our community and what we call our debtor's prison, people being, issued warrants and just this whole non-trust of police in our community has been going on for a long time. And, you know, we know that it erupted 2 years ago, but even today we still have over 5,000 people that have visited us for amnesty, trying to get some relief from these warrants that are hampering them from their everyday life. So there's just so many things. That's a step in the right direction. We also have had lots of different town hall meetings with very different sectors of the community, from our local rappers to, you know, local gang members, meeting with police at a summit. So we are working and doing all types of different things to try to bring the community and police together.
But you said something interesting, and I want to drill down a little bit on that, Ms. Jones. You said you've had a lot of visitors. And I've visited, and I've mm-hmm. reported on what was, you know, happening in Ferguson in the aftermath of the death of Michael Brown. But the reality is that people are visiting, but there are Ferguson people that live there.
Mm-hmm.
They live in that community. They work in that community. How has there been any improvement in your opinion, after the death of Michael Brown, after the scathing DOJ report that came out about the abuse of the justice system in Ferguson of the poor and people of color in Ferguson?
Well, I have to say yes, and but all the eyes are on Ferguson. I actually live in Jennings, which is the community that is adjacent to Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, you know, there's been 40 pieces of legislation that have been, you know, put out that have directly been in relation to the way that policing, the way that our jail systems. So with all eyes on this area, there's a forced change. I think that when you look at SB5, which, you know, limited the amount of money that police can even take in for warrants and things of that nature. We have some really, you know, there's a lot of lawsuits that are going out. Let's talk about that too. We have a lot of civil cases that all the municipalities in this area are being sued from the way that police have been handling, you know, people in our community. So there's some forced change that is happening, and you can see it very clearly. Our jails, which were money makers 3 years ago, you know, if you look at the jail in Jennings, the jail in Ferguson, they're not even putting people in jail anymore in these areas for the same things, and the harassment has stopped because they know that we're under a microscope here.
Interesting.
And I just hope that that's something that is translated across the country and not just in this area.
Real quick, Ron, you were nodding your head when she was talking about forced change. What are you thinking?
What I'm thinking is that the activists and people in the community, they were working before Michael Brown was shot and killed because they were victims of racism and discrimination overtly. So they were working then. When the Justice
Absolutely.
Department came in and sustained the fact that racism and discrimination and policing for profit was taking place, then they had the work. They had a roadmap was presented to them, so then they can begin to work. So the community, the activists, and all of us have been working on this issue for a long time. Where the movement hasn't started is in the police community. Mm-hmm. Now, there have been some articulation of let's go to work since the officers have been shot and killed. And I'm not suggesting that we don't have sympathy and empathy for them, because we do. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is that there's always been work on our side. The police community has been slow to respond. And now after the shootings, what the police community wants you to do is to now hug and kiss them, cooperate with the police and make everything all right. But they're not talking about what are they going to do somehow or another, like the young man that was just here.
Yeah.
There's a role that the police had to play because they have a job to do in our society that they get paid to do. Part of that job is to come in our community, introduce themselves, and find out what it is that public safety means to us and what their job is in our community, which is different across the city depending on the community they work in.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Aaron, calling from Baltimore. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. How you doing?
Doing just fine. Go right ahead.
Like the last caller was saying, basically what I was saying from Baltimore, it has to go a lot further than just police come back in the community and talk to people on the steps. So, like in Baltimore, the problem, this was happening in the 80s. It's more profiling which is being called racism now, but I've always noticed, and I've been profiled a ton of times myself, by the way I may dress, my car, the area I'm in. That's not the police's job, and that's where you they come in confrontation with you, and then that goes the problem. That's just one of them. But, so the police department has got to stop the hiring process in some of these individuals, because I didn't ask to be black. I am black, though, and where I may live at or not live at or what car I drive. But they do sign up to be a police officer, and if they're scared and they want to judge each black person on the way they may be or their record, they shouldn't be a police officer.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much for your input. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Z, calling from Northeast Washington, what's on your mind?
Hey, I just wanted to piggyback off what everybody else is saying about how it's the responsibility of the police officer to make this change. And plus, it goes even deeper than that to, like, our local lawmakers and officials. Because I'm in D.C., I was in Northeast and 8th Street before it was gentrified, and we never had as many police officers as we do now. They talk about violent crime and how that's such a big factor in them policing us and harassing us and stuff. But a lot of these communities, unlike what the dude was saying earlier from the little fraternal order or whatever, aren't even being policed properly. We don't see cops until after somebody is shot, until after something bad is happening, or until they're trying to harass us or kill us for no reason.
Okay. Z, thank you so much. You wanted to make a comment, Ellen.
Yeah, that kind of adds on to what I was saying earlier, where, you know, I remember a time period where if someone stole a bike in the neighborhood, okay, 9 out of 10 of the times, the child knew who the person was, or the parent knew the child's parent, and you would go and you would retrieve the bike. Even if it was the most reckless crackhead mother or parent, whoever, they still understood the morality fact of, okay, my child took your bike and you have to give it back. Now we live in a society, because we're not able to, as a community, because we don't have the resources like white communities, we spoke about this earlier, we have now conditioned ourselves to allow and open our homes up to these police to handle things that really we as a people and as a community could usually naturally handle.
You know, if there's a disagreement,
have a disagreement.
But hold on. Hold on.
Okay.
Because we've had that discussion here before. And, you know, the example that I use, because we had a guest a while ago say that we can police our own communities.
I don't mean police. But if a 12-year-old and a 12-year-old.
I'm not talking about a 12-year-old.
Have an issue.
I'm talking about grown men standing on the corner making noise in front of grandma's house and leaning.
Yeah, but we are talking about 12-year-olds. A 12-year-old just got arrested for carjacking a woman right here in Washington,
okay,
D.C. in a very nice area of Washington, D.C.
I'm talking specifically about a black community. And Ron, I want you to talk about this too. Mm-hmm. If indeed we can address these issues, you know, or if there is an issue of being of moral corruption or whatever you want to describe,
sure.
How do we deal with, you know, the four or five brothers standing on the corner leaning on grandma's car who doesn't bother anyone? Okay. And she's afraid to go out and speak to them because they're going to cuss her out. Are we too far gone in that situation? How do you deal with that? And is that the responsibility of people such as yourself as community?
Well, it is my responsibility. And that's why I go back to not only demand myself as an artist to take responsibility, to send messages and suggest through the art change, and it's okay for you to evolve. It's okay that okay, your father may have been this type of character, or you may come from this source, but it's okay. I grew up on 58th Street here in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. before they tore the projects down, before they talked about a Walmart maybe mm-hmm. being there, and so I survived that environment. That was based on choices. But long story short, we still, as a community, have to develop a greater dependency on each other versus the police.
I gotta take a break. When we come back, more of this conversation. Let's make it better. We'll be back in just a bit.
This is a special edition of the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 HUR Voices. You are a part of the solution. Together, let's make it better. Back now with Harold Fisher.
Welcome back to Let's Make It Better, a special edition on The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Bishop Shirley Holloway is with us now. We also have Maryland Congressman Elijah Cummings and also Dr. Shauna Morgan, Howard University Assistant Professor of English in the Department of Literature of Africa and the African Diaspora. I want to start with Congressman Cummings. Yesterday, you were at the press conference with the commissioner in Baltimore and Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake. It was a scalding DOJ report. First of all, is there a fix or the will for a fix from the lofty perch of Capitol Hill, from your perspective?
I think that there are those on Capitol Hill, particularly on the Democratic side, that want a fix. And I think there's some Republicans that want to fix. But with the gridlock and the situation where parties are fighting each other for every inch of power, I think it's going to be very difficult to get things like national standards for recruiting, for use of force, things of that nature. But there is legislation in the pipeline, and you know, I'm an optimist overall. But I think for our situation in Baltimore, Harold, we've got to deal with this on a local level, and we have no choice. I was telling some people today that when I read the 160-something page report, it really reminded me of South Africa years ago. You've got some 300,000 pedestrian stops over a few years, and then 96% of them, no citations and no charges.
But this is your city, Congressman. Are you surprised at what you read in that report?
No. I think I was a little surprised at the numbers were so great, but I was not surprised. I live in the inner city. I'm sitting in the inner city right now where I've lived for 35 years. And so I've seen some of this happen. And there have been numerous times in the past where there have been reports and there have been complaints. But this is the first time we had such a comprehensive look by the Fed on this level, to this degree, patterns or practice. And this is something that the mayor and I and our federal delegation and the ministers in our community asked for. We wanted to do it. And the reason why we wanted to do that, Harold, is because we had a lot of police officers, ones who would come to me and say, Cummings, you know, we got some bad apples, but we've developed a culture of abuse, and we need to be able to talk to someone confidentially to try to straighten this out. And so this report is very comprehensive. I would recommend it to all, because of the 18,000 police departments throughout the nation, you can guarantee your bottom dollar that these things are happening in many of them. That is the abuse of folks' constitutional rights, and particularly African Americans. And by the way, once they get arrested, as you know, that's a spiraling downward, probably for the rest of their life, because they won't be able to get a record, they won't get a job, and the next thing you know, they're back in prison. And we don't have any choice but to deal with it.
Well, Congressman Elijah Cummings, thank you so much. And we certainly hope that in the coming months, indeed coming years, that we do see some movement on Capitol Hill as it relates to this particular issue. So, again, thank you so much for joining this conversation. We appreciate
it. Thank you,
Hal. I want to go to Bishop Shirley Holloway, founder and CEO of the House of Help, City of Hope, here in the D.C. Metro. As a community activist, Bishop Shirley, and I asked the other activists the same thing, mm-hmm. You know, are you preaching to the choir when it comes to trying to make a difference in the community as it relates to police and communities of color? How do you get outside of your circle of influence to make a difference?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me here,
sure.
Harold. You get outside your influence by going to where the problems are. I want to first say that, you know, we're dealing with something much bigger than what we understand. The plate is mixed with several problems. You have black, you have prejudiceness. You have cops because you're black, cops because you're in a poor neighborhood. But now you got cops messing with women, older women. You know, black cops beating up women. I have a case in my church now that I'm getting ready to deal with where a young girl was just beat down outside of a movie theater over $3 per potato chips. So we can't put it in a black racial perspective. We must look at it as a anger problem. And that's what we're dealing with, basically.
Who's anger?
Anger with the pedestrians and anger with the police. When you put... and you ignite and you come with a fire, it's because somebody said something and somebody didn't like it, and the two didn't like it's come together and it explodes. The police are not de-escalating the problem. They're not trained to. That's the first problem. So there needs to be a training. But I think the supervisors of the police need to be suspended, because before there's fire, there's smoke. They know that they have a problem person on their hand before they do it. Then we as pastors, teachers, principals, and community people, we need to do town hall meetings with our people. This is how you handle when you stop by a cop. This is what you do. We have enough black lawyers in our community, enough lawyers to help do and help the communities handle these problems. We got to stop talking about it, stop doing plans, and we got to start being active in it.
Dr. Morgan, when it comes to this issue of conflict between the police and communities of color, are we at a crossroad? Is this a watershed moment for black folks and broader communities of color?
I certainly think that we are in a critical moment. But, you know, history has shown us that this is not unique to our time. Certainly, you know, I think what we're experiencing now is some 21st century version of the Black Codes. You know, there was some 1960s version of it. You know, in 66, James Baldwin said that the police are the hired and, you know, the state's hired enemies of black people, you know, doling out violence. And so this is not new. This is a new version. It's manifesting in new ways. It's more visible. And the numbers certainly show that, you know, it's not just a problem about rage. When half of the population in Baltimore that's stopped by the police is black, almost half, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have a population of 12%. You know, these numbers show that this absolutely has to do with race, and the problems run deep.
So how do we fix it? Because if this is not new, mm-hmm. is the fix new? And what is it, if so?
Well, the first thing that we have to recognize is that there is no easy fix. There's no singular fix. The fix has to be a multiple pronged approach that deals with all the complexities of this problem. This problem is very much rooted in a number of aspects. It's economic, right? It's rooted in education. It's rooted in the prison system. You know, the vast inequities, right? The vast discrimination that we're experiencing, the vast violence that we're experiencing, is rooted in a problem that is at the very heart of the white supremacist structure under which we live. You know, Baldwin said we're in occupied territory. We are still in occupied territory.
Let me go to the phones quickly. Derek, I only have a minute. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to what the chief was saying. I think the first thing we need to do, we need to be honest. Mm-hmm. Chief gave a really political answer there, and the honest answer should have been is that we have to change police tactics. I'm a son of a retired police officer, and I'm retired military also. I've been deployed. In a lot of neighborhoods and communities, the police are actually like an occupying force. They're stopping just to stop in search of something. No crime was committed, no traffic violation or anything else. And then you can't develop a rapport with your community if they feel like they're being occupied.
Interesting.
It's pretty simple.
Derek, thank you so much. Bishop Shirley, a final word from you on the fix, whoever or wherever I should say the fix comes from.
There's a multiple fix, but I believe that we can do it if we join together and come together. On Sunday at 4:00, we'll be meeting at Oxon Hill Movie Theater to talk about how we can come together to stop the police, understand what the police problem is, and to what we can do with our community to help them, to relate to them and communicate. And that's what we've been doing. We've been sitting down in D.C., in Prince George's County with the police department. What is the problem? What are we doing to make you so violent? What are we doing to tick you off? And as the young millennium generation says, they just gone too far. They're doing too much. Mm-hmm. And we need to communicate that to them.
Dr. Morgan, quickly, the fix, not the problem. Your thoughts?
There are a lot of things currently happening. You know, there are artists, Black poets speak out, are educating people through art. There are musicians who are engaging, you know, in the classroom. We are educating students. The fix also includes what I think has been a really strong proposal from Black Lives Matter that is comprehensive in addressing all the needs, much of the needs of our communities in terms of economics, in terms of what needs to happen. Money needs to move into education, out of militarization of the police. It's not just training. It's, you know, training us to interact with the police is not the fix. You know, going into the police forces and upturning these things that they have learned to do, these practices that they have that are driven by racist ideas about who we are, you know, that needs to be interrupted.
I think we'll have that be the final word. I want to thank you, Dr. Morgan, and of course, Bishop Shirley, for participating in this very important conversation. That is it for Let's Make It Better, a special edition of the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, for this Thursday, August 11th. For the entire WHUR News team, I'm Harold Fisher. Thanks for listening. We hope we've given you something to think about, but most important, we hope we've given you a reason to act in your own way to make it better. Good night.
This has been a special Howard University Radio Network presentation. Don't let the hope and healing stop here. Together, let's make it better. Keep the conversation going using hashtag WHURBetter.